Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock right now on this day. The 18th of November is where we start our journey. Back in 1928, Steamboat Willie would be released for the first time. That would, of course, be the first sound cartoon from Mickey Mouse. In 1941 on this day, Italy would decide to leave Ethiopia after being forced out by Allied attacks. In 1988 on this day, the Big Three, as we would affectionately know them in South Africa, would be convicted of treason. That would be Bobo Molefe, Patrick Lekotla, as well as Moses Chikane. They would be arrested in April of 1989 and then convicted subsequently on this day in history. When we look at the events of 1990 on this day, Andre Agassi would claim his first and only season-ending ATP World Tour Championship on this day. 1992 on this day, Malcolm X the movie would be released, obviously starring Denzel Washington and Angela Bassett. 1995 on this day, a gentleman by the name of Jacob Matlala would win the WBO World Championship. For those who don't know who that is, all you Gen Zs and Gen Alphas out there, that is the boxer formerly known as Baby Jake Matlala in South Africa. 2011 on this day, One Direction would release their debut album Up All Night. That would be on this day in 2011. And 2016 on this day, the Grand Tour would premiere. Obviously this would be the spin-off, spin-off is a bit of a loose word, the alternative to the Top Gear franchise. We all know what happened there. It was a very dramatic fallout between the BBC as well as the gentleman that hosts the Grand Tour. It all seems to have worked out in the end, I suppose. But nonetheless, that's what happened on this day in 2016. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha, and on the show today, we are taking a look at the latest proposal from National Treasury to adjust the tax implications, or the new tax rules rather, that are going to be associated with unit trusts. We're going to look at that because collective investment schemes do make up such a large portion of the investments that are made by asset managers, by those that are in charge of looking at your pension portfolios or building up those pension portfolios. We're going to look at these proposals from National Treasury's perspective. We're going to speak to Treasury and get a sense of why they want to change the tax around these. Then we've got a conversation with Astral Foods CEO Gary Arnold, who was the COO but is now the CEO following that announcement that Chris Schutte would be stepping down. We're going to look at Astral's performance for the last year ended September 2024, get a sense of how they performed and what it is that they are looking toward for the new financial year. We've also got a conversation with CFO of We Buy Cars, Chris Rain, to get a sense of how that business is doing since spinning out from Transaction Capital. They also reported their full year numbers for the similar period to Astral Foods ended September 2024. So we're going to get a sense of how they have been faring and what it is we have to look forward to there. Then we wrap the show up with a personal finance segment, as we do every Monday. We're going to be chatting to Chris Tor, director at Crew Invest, around understanding severe illness cover.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
As always, we start off the show with how the markets have been performing throughout the day. It's been an interesting day of market movements on the local front, but international markets have also had a bit of an up and down kind of day. I'm joined on the line by Chief Investment Officer at Makwe Fund Managers, Makwe Maselela, to take a look at the movements throughout the day, as well as what we can expect from the week that is to come. Dr. Maselela, good evening. Lovely to catch up with you as always. It seems as though we've started off the week on a good note, although last week was a difficult week for us.
It was indeed, you know, afternoon to you or evening to you and to the listeners. I mean, the all share was down almost 1%. We also saw the European and the US markets being down. And I think it was after being happy or getting excited after the elections, then we started seeing the cabinet that Donald Trump is trying to formulate. So that itself started to reinforce that he was not playing. he's definitely going to be implementing all those policies that he's been telling us about when he was campaigning. So I think that had a shock, you know, when it comes to markets. And as we're talking now, Jamie, markets are eager to hear who Trump will pick as the Treasury Secretary. Very important. But yes, market participants started the week looking forward to Nvidia results. We know that it's a big stock, I mean, when it comes to AI. But locally, we'll also be looking at our consumer inflation, retail sales, and our last scheduled, and I'm underlying scheduled, interest rate decision for the year come Thursday. And on a day that the US dollar was stable, the rent is firmer, and probably benefiting from that S&P approving our genuine reform agendas, raising the outlook of SA. And remember, the rent is a commodity currency, so it also benefited from firmer commodity prices.
Makwe, you touched on a couple of things there that I want to dig into a little bit deeper. I want to start with the US picture, and we'll come back to domestic news after that. The announcement, or obviously the conversations that have been happening around the fact that Donald Trump would be replacing Janet Yellen as a Treasury Secretary, but also the rumors around the fact that Jerome Powell could be out of a job. You mentioned that we have one more interest rate decision from the US penciled in for the month of December before we go into the new year, and we don't know how much longer we're going to be dealing with the current Fed chair. The US's obvious inflation policy or interest rate policies a very interesting dynamic, because it does in some ways shape what happens in the rest of the world. And we've got our own interest rate decision coming up this week, and we'll get into that in a second. Is there still concern around what's happening in the US? Has the Trump trade kind of worn off now?
Yeah, to some extent. But I think when it comes to the Fed chair, I think the current chair, Jeremy, made it very clear last week, Thursday, that they are not going to be rushing to cut interest rates. And that's what the market has been saying, that Trump's policies are inflationary. Then we started dialing back our expectations. My point is, whether he remains or he brings a new guy, then we don't have to expect rapid interest rate cuts out of the US. And you are right, they are very important, those rates that side, because most things are priced in US dollars. So most guys will try to maintain that interest rate differential between the US dollar and our currencies.
Marco, let's look at our currencies, let's look at the South African picture, and let's look at what we can expect. I mean, we've got CPI coming out this week, interest rates coming out this week, the Rand is at 18 Rand and 2 cents. Equity markets seemingly starting off a little better this week, but of course, again, we had that torrid week last week for resource counters. What are your thoughts around the data points that are coming out this week, the inflation and the interest rate prints?
Remember, inflation in September was 3.8. Most probably it will still be under 4%, even if it might go to 3.9 because of the latest petrol prices increases that we've seen. And we also have our September retail sales numbers. August increased by 3.2. But the point is, whatever number we get from the consumer inflation on Wednesday, that is not going to impact or affect the decision that our Reserve Bank will be making on Thursday. We still expect that early Christmas bonus, Jimmy, that will get another 25 basis point cut. The question will be the January meeting, because that meeting will be happening after the US have made their decision in December.
So we are definitely going to miss out on that. We'll have to play catch up. It's because we meet every second month. They have a monthly meeting, but there's very little that we can do around that. I suppose that is the way life does work out. Michael, you touched on this earlier, and I want to look at it now. S&P Standard & Poor revising the outlook for South Africa. Now, let's be clear, we're still well below investment grade, but the outlook isn't looking as bad as it was before.
You know, the good thing with this outlook, from positive, then you can only be upgraded. Because if you're still at stable, you're not going to be upgraded. So if we don't disappoint and we implement and execute the way people are hoping, then definitely we'll see some improvement as well. And I think it's that confidence that people are putting when it comes to the GNU. But we have just to remember, at some point when Cyril took over as the president of the country, there was this confidence that was building in. But unfortunately, over a period of time, you know, people got disappointed, saying things are not happening on time, blah, blah, blah. So we hope this time around we're not going to disappoint and make sure that we definitely execute and deliver those required structural reforms. Then at least we'll start seeing our economy doing well. Look what happened to, as well, when it comes to our unemployment rate also improving. And I think the issue of electricity, fortunate enough, it's not a GNU matter. We've seen an improvement even before then, and we hope that will continue to build up.
I'm looking forward to the day, every single day, when South Africa does not score as many own goals as we used to. But we are making progress. We're moving in the right direction, and we got to take those wins as they come. Marco, let's move to Telkom. They gave us an update on their performance. Interesting to draw from that Telkom conversation that the Telkom CEO, Serame, they're mentioning that the capital expenditure into the fiber sides of the businesses would require them to have those businesses themselves justify how they would have earned that capex. So it looks as though the business is kind of being very tight around where they roll out capital. There's been a decrease in the amount of capex kind of allocated over this period. But at the same time, you look at something like Telkom and you compare it with what's been happening with the Vodacom massive deal that took 3 years only to be declined. What do we make of Telkom's current position? I mean, the share price clocked 30 Rand again today.
I think he's been very responsible. Remember, we've been having a problem with this investment that have been going into AI, that when are we going to start seeing the results? That's all he's saying, that yes, we've managed to kickstart you. Can we start seeing the result to justify further capex when it comes to those kind of businesses? And I think that's the only way that you can run a business, given that you've got limited resources. And yes, so far, mobile revenue up 10%, fiber data services up 15%. You know, all these numbers we see them. My concern is, yes, the mobile customers only 22.8 million or so. You cannot compare them with the two big guys. But when will they start making good money coming out of financial services? Because we see the other two guys are doing extremely well. We even see even the contribution, you know, of fintech revenue when it comes to the service revenue, that it gets to be significant. And I think that's where it's going. Remember the days of voice, we said voice is no longer making money. We'll start making money out of data. Then we realized that data prices went down quite sharply. Then I think the opportunity for these companies is to make money when it comes to fintech. And my question is, when will Telkom start getting into that space and start at least, you know, diversifying their revenues?
Marco, before I let you go, I want to take a look at PPC. Updates from their side, what do they have to say?
You know, PPC, they had a very strong second quarter, rebuilding of a weaker profit the first quarter. And despite an overall decline when it comes to cement volumes, as well when it comes to ready mix and edge businesses, they delivered higher cash flow generation. I think it was up 36.2%, but their revenue was down 4.2%, and that was due to Zimbabwe revenue decreasing and also materials revenue. And cost discipline and price growth were the main drivers for the recovery, and profits as headline earnings per share up 10%.
Profits up 10%. It looks as though that is going to be a good step for the team at a PPC. Hopefully they can continue with that momentum. We'll have to keep an eye on that and see how that continues to shape up. Marco, thank you so much as always for the time and for the insights. Marco Masilela, Chief Investment Officer at Marco Fund Managers, on the market movements for the day and what we can expect.
Hi, my name is Stephen Tim. I'm an investigative journalist, and I recently got back from Brazil, where I went on a hunt to find out if Miratrading International founder Johan Steinberg is dead or alive. What I found is stranger than anything I expected to find. Make sure to join me and Kieran Ryan on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast this week.
Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
Hello, Jeremy Maggs here. I've just finished recording the next episode of Fix SA here on MoneyWeb. I'm in conversation with Ketso Gordon, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the South African SME Fund. Among the topics of conversation, why small businesses need to be paid in 30 days, the art of blended financing, and why scalability is not necessarily important in small businesses.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
And we're taking a look at the latest rules that are on the table for unit trusts that are being proposed by National Treasury around how unit trusts are going to be taxed going forward, the differences this will make, and potentially how it could affect you and I as those that invest in those sorts of products. Joined on the line by the Director for Personal Income Tax at National Treasury, Johan Lamprecht, to take a look at this and see if we can make sense of this. Johan, good evening. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with what's being proposed here and why.
Good evening, Jiminy. Good evening to your listeners. I hope you can hear me all right.
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
All right. So there's three main proposals in the document that we've published, which people can comment on until the 13th of December. So we're looking forward to those comments. So the first one is the proposal to make a collective investment schemes fully tax transparent, similar to what you would find in Switzerland and in Hong Kong. So what that means is currently it's a flow-through system. So this will be even more of a pure flow-through system, if you like, whereby returns would not be taxed in the vehicle itself. It will only be taxed in the hands of the investors or the unit holders in this case. So that is the first proposal. The second proposal is to have a safe harbor. So safe harbor percentage is mentioned of 33%, but it's just an example really. So the idea is that a certain percentage of the value of the portfolio can be traded per year. And if you're under that particular percentage, that threshold, that's a safe harbor, it will always be taxed as capital. Anything above that would then depend on facts and circumstances. So that the idea is to give more clarity to investors in terms of how their investments will be taxed, whether it will be taxed as capital, whether it will be taxed as income. And then thirdly is the proposal to take hedge funds out of the collective investment scheme regime from a regulatory as well as a tax perspective. The reason for that is that in their very nature, hedge funds are different than collective investment schemes. They tend to be more shorter term focused, and they tend to be also traded more regularly. So that is the idea of doing that. So those are the three sort of key proposals, which we are hoping to find some interesting comments on.
Mm. Johan, the first two proposals that we looked at, obviously the full follow-through option and the safe harbor option. The follow-through option is something that's used in the US. The safe harbor option is something that's used in Europe. How do we align our own South African tax structures and our tax system to be convenient for South African taxpayers rather than looking at these systems? Obviously, it's good to be able to learn from guys that have done it before and kind of see which one works best. Is there a world in which we say we don't particularly like this one alone or this one alone, and we kind of find a new merge system for ourselves?
Yes, the idea is not necessarily to follow any of the international examples, you know, exactly as they are. The idea is to come up with a unique, fit for purpose solution for South Africa. So currently we do have a flow through system, but it's not transparent. So if certain proceeds are not distributed to investors, it can still be taxed in the collective investment scheme. Whereas, and there's also uncertainty at the moment in terms of whether it will be taxed as capital or whether it will be taxed as income. So what we have found is some collective investment schemes, we saw a lot of trading turnover. And trading, if you look at case law, if you look at facts and circumstances, trading normally would be taxed as income. So just to get more certainty about that and to sort of get a better framework for so that investors would know, and also the stakeholders, the fund managers would know when it would be taxed as capital, when it would be taxed as income, particularly the safe harbor option is proposed. And then in terms of making it fully transparent, that is to bring the investment, the taxation regime of collective investment scheme much closer to if a person were to invest directly in these assets, not through a vehicle. Mm. So that's sort of the idea behind that.
Mm. I was actually coming to that, Johan, to say, how does this now affect the everyday investor? Because for a large part of it, a lot of investors go through into these collective investment schemes and these unit trusts via, whether it's a financial planner, whether it's an asset manager, whether it's a hedge fund, via a separate vehicle, right? So now if we're bringing this more in line with saying that investors can almost think of it as though they themselves would be, from a tax base at least, be looking at the implications of that, does that put the taxpayer at an advantage or at a disadvantage, understanding that in some cases they might still have to go through these third-party providers and still pay fees?
Yes, we will look very closely at all of those things because, as you noted, it's collective investment schemes are a very important pool of savings for South Africa, and many retail investors do invest through unit trusts, also pension funds invest. So we obviously going to look not to disadvantage or discourage people from investing. Another consideration is the fact that collective investment schemes are well regulated. They offer a lot of protection to investors through that regulation. And one of the arguments for having a preferential tax regime is to encourage investors to invest through those structures. Some people may agree with it, some people may disagree with it. Some tend to say no, but it should be more in line with if you invested as an individual. But we will definitely take all of those into account, all of those factors into account. One of the issues that may come up is the whole issue of when you get taxed. Is there a deferral, or do you get taxed on an annual basis? And then obviously the big issue is whether it will be taxed as capital or whether it will be taxed as income, because that will make quite a big difference to the returns, after-tax returns of investors.
Absolutely. I suppose we will continue with these. I believe the draft is currently out for comment and discussion until the deadline of the 13th of December. And perhaps between then and February, we might see something being prepared for the budget speech of 2025. But we'll leave that conversation there for now, Johan. Thank you for the time, for the insights, and for giving us a bit more color around what it is that National Treasury was thinking when putting this forward. We'll leave the conversation there. That's Johan Lamprecht, who is the Director for Personal Income Tax at National Treasury, joining us to take a look at the latest proposals for the new tax structures that could be put in place for unit trusts and collective investment schemes.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
7:05 was the time this morning when Astral Foods gave us their year-end update for the financial year ended 30 September 2024. If you remember, this was a company that didn't have the best 2023 financial year, and we reflected on that this time last year to take a look at how the company performed. We're doing that once again this year, and this time we are joined by the company's newest CEO, who was the COO this time last year, Gary Arnold, to take a look at the business's performance, see if we can make sense of it. Good evening, Gary. Lovely to speak to you again. First of all, hearty congratulations on the change of titles and change of letters. I suppose it comes with a lot of work. I understand that that change will be effective early next year, but nonetheless, allow us to be the first to congratulate you where possible. And how was the year? How was the year that was, other than these big changes?
Jimmy, good evening, and to your listeners, and thank you very much for the well wishes. Much appreciated. We've worked alongside Chris for many, many years, so look forward to the continuation and doing what we do best, and that's poultry farming. But Jimmy, thank you. The past year was marked obviously by factors that supported the result. I mean, we presented a very good set of results off a low base in the past year, and as you rightly mentioned earlier on, look, 2023, you know, was a year of disasters with load shedding and bird flu for us, with a significant financial impact on the company. So this year, turning around those misfortunes and close to, you know, 1.7 billion rand, posting a profit of 1.1 billion rand, which we should not shy away from, being the third best in the company's 24-year history. So a good set of results, Jimmy, and something that we're happy to talk about. Big change from last year where, you know, everything was quite negative. So very, very pleased to report these results.
Gary, when you and I caught up last year, we spoke about the performance of Astral just coming out of the, it was around this time, around the 20th of November last year, actually, coming out of probably the worst bout of load shedding that you've ever experienced. I mean, I don't think there was a single other company that reported 2 billion rands worth of load shedding impact on the JSE. It was a severe impact on the business's financials, swung you guys into a loss and everything. Take me through what that looks like now, what kinds of systems you've had to put in place to avoid having that kind of hit on the balance sheet or on the financial statements, rather.
Sure, Jimmy. So, you know, obviously with the advent of load shedding at stage six towards the end of 2022, and then that you know, impacted our operations well up until June of 2023. You know, the first action was at that time to provide emergency generation capacity for our operations. So we did that at significant capital cost. Our plants are big users of electricity, so that came at no small investment. And of course, we had a massive diesel bill attached to running generators last year. But probably the biggest impact on us as a company and as a poultry company is that, you know, we were unfortunately impacted by this probably more than other businesses would, where they've got a diesel bill. You know, we had a massive backlog of chickens on the farms. We called it the Big Bird era last year. You may remember that, where we, because we faced these interruptions in our processing plants or abattoirs, we had this backlog or this buildup of live broilers on our farms. Now, those birds you have to feed, they get older, they get bigger, and of course they consumed a lot of feed during that episode until we had actually caught up our production and caught up the backlog in the processing of these broilers in our plants. So the biggest impact in load shedding last year was a close on billion rand feed bill. And of course, that was unique to us as a poultry business or to the industry. But then, of course, you had to lump on top of that the diesel bill and then all the overtime and other costs that came with it to catch up the backlog in production, which we did by June last year.
Gary, when we look at the financials, I mean, revenue's increasing quite a bit, but cost of sales coming down, obviously being able to leverage off of some of those costs you had to incur last year. Gross profit increasing quite a bit. You guys did a really good number there.
Jimmy, look, again, that's in reality attached to the feed bill that you know, we faced through the year. We had this obviously much better, we call it feed conversion efficiency. So the feed consumption of the birds obviously a lot lower because they weren't as big and we didn't have to feed them while they remained on farm with load shedding. But we also came off record high feed costs in the prior year. If you cast our mind back there, you know, we at the time, early 2023, we faced record high maize and soy meal prices on SAFEX. So not only did we have very high feed costs last year, but then we had to feed all those big birds at the high feed cost. Fortunately, the past financial year, we had lower feed prices as a result of, you know, the markets moving down on soft commodities through the major part of 2024. But then we didn't have to feed these large amounts of feed. So our total feed bill came off quite significantly, as explained.
Gary, I want to take a look at just some of the other prospects for the business. We'll look ahead to what the new financial year looks like in a moment, but I want to look at just the fact that last year was a tough year. There was no dividend. That was clear as to why that was the case. This year, we were able to return back to a dividend, and the importance of that to say to shareholders, look, last year was beyond our control, but we haven't forgotten about you.
100%, Jimmy. I mean, we indicated to the market at the end of last year that we would probably return to a positive cash balance within an 18 to 24 month time frame. And that was the outlook at the time. Now, we have managed to claw back just over R1 billion in debt through our operating cash flows during the year. So closing the year with a small positive cash balance, certainly not carrying the debt that we did on our balance sheet towards the end of 2023. And so having a look at that, giving consideration to future earnings and the affordability of a dividend, our board sat down with the numbers, and we didn't pay any dividend through interim and our final results last year. And of course, we have to look at rewarding shareholders, and they invest in the company, they're looking for returns on that investment, and we're in a fortunate position that we were able to declare dividend. And as you rightly say, I think that's important. As we have to return something back to our shareholders.
Gary, let's take our listeners through those corporate adjustments that we had at the start of the show, obviously with you coming in as the new CEO, Chris leaving effective of January 2025. Take us through some of the corporate adjustments and the timing of everything else and just the rationale behind what's going on and the changes. Obviously, continuity is essential for any business, and it's great that you've been in the business for this long. It makes everything that much easier, but just take us through those changes.
Jimmy, certainly, Chris is retiring at our AGM end of January. He is 65 in this year, and per our statutory requirements, 65 is the retirement age. But Chris has served the company for 16 years. He's been in this industry for 42 years, so stalwart of the industry. I've worked alongside Chris for 22 years. I've been in Astral for 28 years. So continuity is key. I think I have the background and experience, at least in the poultry industry and Astral, to take the business forward. Obviously, this you don't do it alone. This is a team effort. This isn't a one-man show. So we have a very, very strong team in Astral, very confident in the senior management team. And we'll continue with executing the strategy, which has stood the company in good stead over the years. Best cost strategy in this industry, and particularly in our business, very important. So we'll continue executing and working hard for our company. And we've got a lot of employees and shareholders and suppliers into this business. So it's important for our stakeholders that we continue to build on what Chris has done with Astral, and certainly built a great company, leaving us in a healthy financial position. We have the opportunity, I think, if the consumer market does show, as it may, with a couple of positive signs in the macroeconomic space, if we see a bit of positive news around the consumer, we're well poised to grow, expand our revenue growth opportunities with the spare capacity we have, and keep on building on that best cost strategy that we've all been part of executing for so many years. So certainly the continuity is there, and we'll just continue to build on what Chris and the team have put in place.
Gary, before I let you go, I want to look at that outlook a little bit more. I mean, obviously, things like bird flu remain a major concern for the business, which is something you have very little control over, if we're being entirely honest. But I want to get your thoughts around where the consumer sits now that interest rates are set to come down, where you sit as a business now that we've got this new structure of a unified government or a government of national unity or whatever it is we're calling it at this point. How are you seeing the South African landscape that you are such a big player in, and how are you seeing just the overall outlook from a business perspective going into 2025?
Jimmy, look, the formation of a government of national unity, we trust, will bring some stability to the economy. We obviously need to see much needed investment in infrastructure and growth in South African economy, with that creating jobs. So we trust that the government national unity will bring that and bring some stability to the governance in South Africa, but obviously attract investment. And I think they have their work cut out for them in investment and infrastructure spend. As we know, infrastructure has been a major, has had a major cost impact in a number of, or most industries over the past few years. So we do trust that will improve. And with jobs and some softening in interest rates, I think we've got a little way to go there. We've seen a cut of 25 basis points. We look towards the Reserve Bank to cut those rates again. And that together with the two-pot retirement system where, you know, investors are able to withdraw some of their benefits now. We believe that those all small positive signs towards a strengthening consumer environment, but we must caution that, you know, the consumer market right now remains very, very constrained. There's not a lot of disposable income around. And, of course, in our business, that's, you know, we're a frozen chicken, which is a large part of our product mix, is a commodity. We have to produce it at the best cost. We need to make sure that it's affordable to the consumer out there. And, you know, with constrained spending, the whole food basket, never mind other luxuries, comes under pressure. So the retail sector are seeing, some constrained spending at the moment. And hopefully some positive macroeconomic signs can turn that around in the coming, or the near term, Jimmy.
Well, we'll pass on the message to the Reserve Bank Governor, if we can, that those interest rates must come down later this week. We'll leave it at that. Gary, thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Gary Arnold, CEO, no longer COO, of Astral Foods, joining us to reflect on the performance of Astral Foods over the last financial year, as well as how they're seeing the South African landscape at the moment.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's just gone 6:41. You're listening to the SFM Market Update. I'm your host, Jimmy Moyaha, and we're taking a look at We Buy Cars. They gave us their maiden full year results. I've been waiting for these results for the longest time. They listed back at the start of this year, around March, April, and we finally have a full set of annual results from them. I'm joined on the line by Chris Rain, Chief Financial Officer at We Buy Cars, to take a look at these results and see if we can make sense of them. Good evening, Chris. Welcome to the show. Lovely to get to speak to you. Welcome to the world of listed companies. How has the year been for you guys?
A very good evening to you, Jimmy, and good evening to your listeners. These maiden results do indeed come around every year, and we're very excited to have put out an exceptional set of results in our first full financial year post the unbundling and separate listing of We Buy Cars on the JSE.
Chris, we're going to get into some of the details there, because there's a lot of big numbers there that we need to clarify and make sense of and all of that. But before we get to that, I want to just take a look at, obviously, this being a maiden year, having listed earlier this year, listing price around the 20 Rand range. We're now at the 40 Rand range. The business clearly doing well, but also the market saying, you know what, we feel that this is a better fair value than what the team at We Buy Cars pitched it at when listing took place. Did you guys kind of go in conservatively, intentionally, to say, we know the value of our product, but we want the market to get to that value themselves?
Yeah, so the sort of share price and the ticker tape is not something that we follow at We Buy Cars. We did deliver a 23.4% improvement in core headline earnings. But I think probably most relevant is that in May 2024, we set out to the market our ambition to sell 23,000 motor cars a month by 2028. And as you would have heard earlier this morning, we've made some good progress. And at this point in time, it does feel that we're on track with those growth ambitions.
Chris, when we look at those sales, how do you keep that balance? I mean, a business like We Buy Cars, you have to keep a very delicate balance between keeping too much stock, but also keeping just enough stock so that you're not finding yourselves unable to service the client. How are you guys striking that balance, especially looking at the fact that the car market at the moment seems to be swaying more in your favor for secondhand vehicles rather than new vehicles, because those ones are just that much more expensive?
Jimmy, so if we analyze these, what we call vehicle parks, you're absolutely correct. There is more growth in the used vehicle space than there is in new vehicles. In this 12-month period, we bought in excess of 167,000 motor cars and sold in excess of 165,000 motor vehicles. So there is a delicate balance there. So that's 17 and 16.4% up year on year. We did open one more supermarket in the financial year under review. And so we were able to take those increased volumes to stock up on those additional parking bays and on that additional supermarket floor.
Chris, let's look at some of the movements throughout the year. Core headline earnings per share was up 23.4%, as you said, but HEPS, as in the normal headline earnings per share, as well as basic headline earnings per share, coming down quite a bit. If we look at the call options, that was about 426 million rand of a once-off derecognition. Now, that's half a billion rand is quite a bit of money there, but obviously having to understand the nature of that transaction makes it so much more important, especially because it didn't affect the cash on the business and all of that. Take us through that transaction and take us through what happened there.
Jimmy, so yes, that's right. There were two adjustments to our headline earnings to get to the core headline earnings. The first one was pursuant to the successful listing on the main board. We incurred once-off professional legal and JSE listing fees totaling 45 million rand. And then the one that you touched on is the derecognition of the call option derivative, really just an accounting entry. So it's sort of once off in nature, non-core, and has no cash flow impact. But it related to the call options that the company had over the 25% shareholding owned by the founders. With the listing, sort of that shareholders agreement was cancelled, which led to the cancellation of the call options. And so it's really just a big journal entry with no cash flow impact.
So the business itself is not worse off or better off for that transaction, but it had to be accounted for, obviously, from an accounting perspective, as you mentioned, Chris. Chris, I want to look at something else that went through, but this was more of a business decision, refinancing your 715 million rand property portfolio. Obviously, refinancing is always something to be done if you can get a lower rate, because that's going to mean paying a lower interest portion over whatever period of time. And you were able to do that. Tell me about that and tell me about how much more you're going to be able to save from a business perspective.
So you're absolutely right. We put out the sort of property portfolio on a competitive bid in September, October 2023. And we awarded the bid to RMB at a lower interest rate. Probably a saving of just in excess of 1.2%. So that will serve us favorably going forward. And as we also said this morning, we've been successful in renegotiating some of the interest rates on our revolving credit facilities. And those are the bank lines that we use to actually fund the inventory. So going forward, we should see lower interest rates on both of those pots of funding.
Chris, take me through what the rest of your financial year looks like, or what the plan kind of looks like. I mean, we touched on, obviously, the goals for your sales targets by 2028, but alongside that is to double the market share by the same period of time. Take me through your outlook, what you guys are planning to do, what the new financial year looks like, and possibly, I mean, I suppose, by extension, the two or three financial years that follow that.
Yes, so I mean, it's difficult for me to tell you what the next financial year will look like, but suffice to say, our growth ambition is to sell 23,000 cars a month by 2028. I think what is positive is that we've announced today that we've secured some more real estate. So more specifically, we've secured a big tract of land in Lansdowne in Cape Town. That's 6 hectares of land. We secured 6 hectares in Montana in Pretoria very recently. On that, we'll develop a We Buy Cars facility on which we should be able to house 1,000 motor vehicles. And just before the year end was out, we bought an existing motor dealership in Vereeniging, which is a big on a big plot of land. It's 6,000 squares under roof, but 23,000 squares in totality. And we think we can set up a very nice We Buy Cars in Vereeniging. So those three are quite substantial steps in our growth plan, and we're very excited about those new opportunities.
Chris, those new opportunities and that growth plan won't be hampered by interest rates coming down. I mean, as we touched on a little earlier in the chat, it is very much a secondhand kind of market, understanding that you guys are able to provide more affordable vehicles than some of the new car vehicles, or the new car market, rather. Do you see that momentum continuing for the foreseeable future? I mean, obviously, I don't think you would have invested this much without having some idea of what you see in terms of trends.
So we also eagerly await the 21st of November MPC meeting. We think that there will be another interest rate decrease. I guess the quantum thereof is uncertain. But that will put some certainty back with consumers. And we'll also, we think we'll see an uptick in the sort of finance applications that we will receive. And that should put us in a better space in what we call our third channel, which is the finance channel, which is the private individuals who go to banks to borrow money to buy motor vehicles.
Well, all the best of luck for the new year, Chris. You and I are definitely going to catch up a lot more, especially as you guys keep being as busy as you are. We wish you the best of luck and congratulations on the maiden set of results. Very, very impressive. We'll leave it at that. That's Chris Arain, who is the Chief Financial Officer at We Buy Cars, on their first full set of results and how the business is doing.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's another personal finance segment on a Monday, and we continue looking at things that can hopefully assist you in better preparing in your personal financial journey. This week, we are taking a look at severe illness cover. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had a look at terminal illness cover. This week, we're looking at something slightly different in the form of severe illness cover. I'm joined on the line by Craig Tor, who's a director at Crew Invest, to take a look at this and see if we can make sense of it. Good evening, Craig. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's understand what we mean by severe illness cover, and perhaps let's dip into a bit about how it differs from the terminal illness cover that we might have previously discussed.
Hi, Jimmy, and thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, severe illness could result in a terminal illness. Terminal illness meaning that the sort of end is in sight. So, you know, dread disease or severe illness or critical illness, it's known by a whole number of different names, is really pertaining to the diagnosis of a condition that may or may not be terminal. So, you know, upon diagnosis, whether it's a cancer, a stroke, a heart attack, and numerous others, the insured person would receive a lump sum payout of that benefit.
Craig, how do people prepare for that kind of situation? I mean, obviously, you can't really anticipate whether or not you're going to contract an illness or whether or not it'll be a severe illness. What's the best way to prepare from a policy perspective? And then I suppose from a lifestyle perspective around managing those kinds of covers. They're not the everyday cover that we think of.
Yeah, it's a very difficult one, Jimmy. And I think the hardest part is calculating or trying to prepare for how much cover you would need. Firstly, you have no idea which dread disease you're going to contract, if one at all. And secondly, you wouldn't have any idea of what it would cost you if you don't know what it's going to be. So typically, there are a couple of factors that we look at that will determine how much or how little dread disease to have. We'd look at what other cover the person has in place. So for example, if you have a medical aid and if you have gap cover, medical schemes have been obliged by the law to cover certain life-threatening conditions when hospitalized. So that picks up a lot of the risk that people were perhaps subjected to 20, 30 years ago, even when they had medical schemes. So, of course, if you've got a medical aid and gap cover, the chance of having shortfall in relating to a dread disease is quite minimized. Then the other factor to look at is, does the insured person have an income protection benefit in place? They could have that via their pension fund at work or in their personal capacity. And then the other benefit that kind of can tend to or seem to overlap is capital disability. So that's a lump sum that you'd receive from the insurer on being termed to be disabled. So, you know, sometimes these critical illnesses are sort of a temporary nature. And if you've got all of the other bases covered, the financial implication may not be as severe as one would expect. So it's quite a difficult one to calculate, but if you have all of the other covers in place, certainly the need for dread disease or severe illness cover can be reduced or minimized.
Craig, when we look at the severe illness cover versus something that you mentioned, the disability cover, are those fundamentally different? I mean, if I have one, do I need the other? Can I have both in place? How do you navigate that? Because you use the disability one as an example, and there are individuals out there with disability cover, but that might not necessarily be dread disease or severe illness cover.
Yes. So the two do tend to overlap, and it is quite confusing for your typical person on the street. But typically what would happen is when, or the most appropriate in our view time to use capital disability is when a lump sum is needed, for example, to settle debt, a bond, or a post-retirement shortfall, you know, a capital disability amount could be used. So what actually happens there is that the disability is not potentially as a result of a dread disease, you know, so that's where the two possibly don't overlap, whereas the dread disease itself could result in a payout, and that dread disease could lead to a disability. So effectively, you could receive a payment for contracting a dread disease, and then a further payment for it leading to a disability. So there is a little bit of an overlap that one needs to be aware of. And that's why I said up front, you know, if you have the disability in place, the dread disease or the sum that you would insure yourself for in the event of a dread disease could possibly be a little less than if you didn't have the disability in place.
Craig, when we look at other policies, I mean, this is obviously a policy that people get over and above some of the other existing policies that they have. But if I've got a life policy, can I add something like this to the life policy, or does this need to be its own kind of little separate set of insurance policies that I put in place, perhaps with a separate provider, or is it something I can just bundle into the rest of my covers?
Yeah, Jimmy, typically that would be the most obvious route to go, just add it to your existing policy. It would result in underwriting, so you're not going to save yourself the underwriting, but it would keep your life a little simpler from an administrative point of view. Alternatively, you can have a standalone product, so either option is available. Typically, it would depend on underwriting and pricing.
Mm. Now, when we look at underwriting and pricing, obviously that'll determine the cost and the premium and those sorts of things. Craig, take me through the tax implications. If I happen to need to claim from this, or there's a payout from this, is that subject to tax? Is that going to be payout in a lump sum? Is that something I'm going to receive as an annuity? Can I decide between how I want to have the amounts paid out?
Yeah, so Jimmy, there isn't a tax consequence. So typically you would receive the lump sum payout dependent on severity in a lot of the products. I think there are a couple of products where you can receive a monthly payout for a period of time, but generally it's seen as a lump sum payout. And the rationale behind that is it's there to defray medical expenses, possibly make some changes at home, to your car, for example, wheelchair purchases, those sorts of things. It's typically a lump sum payout there.
So what happens after the lump sum, Craig? Do I then not have a cover in place? Does the cover wear off at a certain time? If I've claimed, what then happens to the policy? Do I need to get a new policy?
So there's something called an accelerated benefit, which means that you could have multiple claims under the critical illness banner, and it would typically be for a new condition or a different condition. However, some of the products do allow multiple claims for the same condition should it become more severe. So, for example, as cancer moves from a stage 1 to stage 2, 3, 4, you could get a part payout at stage 1 and then receive a top-up payout at stage 2 and 3, for example.
Craig, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the T's and C's, so to speak, for policies like this. I mean, we touched on the fact that most types of illnesses are covered. Most types of diseases would be covered under this, and there are very specific diseases that are covered there. Are there specific exclusions that might prevent you from accessing this sort of cover, or while you have the cover, then prevent you from claiming under whatever exclusionary clauses that might come specifically with this type of cover?
Yeah. So I think, Jimmy, again, you've got your typical exclusions, you know, suicide in the first couple of years, or attempted suicide being an exclusion if you injure yourself in a self-inflicted injury or any illness relating to drug and alcohol abuse. So these are your typical exclusions. And then there are condition-specific exclusions. So when a person applies for the cover and have a pre-existing condition, the insurer could well exclude any claim for that pre-existing condition because it's deemed to be too high a risk for the insurer, but then they would still have the cover for the other conditions that may crop up over time.
Now we know a little bit more about what a severe illness cover might look like. For those of you that are looking to have these conversations, please reach out to financial advisors, have the conversations as part of your other financial decisions, and see which options and which cover is best for you. I think we'll leave it at that, Craig. Thank you so much for the time and for the insights. That's Craig Tor, Director at Crewe Invest, joining us to take a look at what it means to have severe illness cover in place and some of the considerations you should think about when you're looking at that sort of cover. It's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Coase is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, good night.